The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks. My name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I gotta check my time because I can blather on for days. Ask any of my sponsees. So my sobriety date is February 15th, 1985. Sorry, I didn't mean to surprise you. My home group is the Broad Highway out in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It meets on Wednesday nights at 7. I highly recommend it. And I have 5 sponsees and 3 or 4 women who I am wise friends with, and a whole host of other commitments in this program, and I'm a very happy, what is it they say? Not happy member. I'm forgetting, and it doesn't matter. Anyway, so my story, happy customer of AA. So my story starts out long time ago. I've been sober more than half my life at this point. When I turned 30, I had been sober for half my life, and it's gone up from there. And I did it the exact same way that anybody else here does it. I did it one day at a time by not picking up a drink. And the only thing that I think is sort of interesting is that I did come in when I was 15, and my drinking, I mean, I can't name a 12 or whatever year old that drinks socially, especially when they're not doing it alone or when they're doing it alone. I came up in a house full of drunks. I actually found out just recently that that my aunt, who passed away a number of years ago, didn't actually die of the causes that were stated to our family members. She actually died because she had a crystal meth addiction that basically blew out her lungs and heart, and she was driving one day and turned blue and died. And to me, it's like I came in through the back door of Al-Anon, so I came up with that there is no pink elephant in the room. Like, don't pay attention to this. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to address the fact that, when I was 12, I drank myself into a blackout, slid down the drapes, and barfed all over the window as my mom was driving in, into the driveway from work. Like, nobody wanted to talk about that. They just sort of brushed it under the carpet. And it was just sort of a miracle that right around the same time my mom got sober, plugged me into Alateen, which plugged me into, I don't mean to talk badly of Alateen since I'm being taped, but it plugged me into a bunch of people who were sort of like gestational alcoholics. And we, they had better ways of getting booze and drugs than I had, and I had different tactics, and, between the multitude of us, we managed to get loaded. And we had a great time, and many of us are, we came in early as a result of that. The other thing that happened that's a little bit unusual in my story is back in 1985, in northern New Jersey where I grew up, it became sort of a thing if your child had any kind of, you know, drug use or alcohol use or behavioral problems, to send them off to rehab. So when I was I got sober my freshman year of high school, and right around the same time, probably about 20 of my fellow classmates were shipped off to rehab. So when they all came back, the school actually started a sober homeroom. And God's honest truth, I wouldn't lie about this stuff. I couldn't make this stuff up. And they said the Serenity Prayer instead of the Pledge of Allegiance, that, you know, and we all went to meetings together. And if I had walked in, I mean, you guys don't realize how lucky you are to be sitting in this room and to see so many faces your own age, and you're like, faces that just don't look like your mom or your dad or your grandparents, for that matter. You know, that you have people that, you know, that can become like sober running buddies, that can become those people that you hang out with, that make you want to stay at the center of the pack, so to speak, you know, so that the disease of alcoholism doesn't pick you off the edges. You know, if I had walked into meetings in northern New Jersey, you know, at that time, I would have seen my parents and my grandparents, and it was because of these 20 kids. And there was a small community of young people. Back then, young was like 27. Like, it was sort of funny. But so anyway, I was able to go to meetings, and you know, you're in New York, you don't have to think about getting rides to meetings. Like, in Jersey, like, a meeting might be 20, 30 minutes away by car, not by subway. And so, like, we had this little posse of us, and we'd all get together, and we would, you know, pile five or six people in a car, and we'd all drive out. And honestly, you know, I had a desire to stop drinking in the beginning, and as soon as the pain sort of subsided a little bit, I had a desire to go to meetings because there were cute boys there. And it took me a while. I want to be like really honest, because like I am not 25 years or whatever. I am not the poster child of AA. Like, I did, if you told me to, you gave me a suggestion, I did the opposite. And, you know, I paid for it in the fact that, you know, I suffered a lot on a regular basis. But the one thing that I did right was that first step. You know, 51% of me said, I'm an alcoholic, I'm not going to pick up a drink today. Like, in my book, that's what I need. I need that extra 1% to tip me between yes and no. And so long as I can muster 1%, I can stay sober. And I had to think of it that way, because I walked in here and I was like, I'm 15. What am I going to do when I go to my prom? Like, I couldn't even think about getting married. Like, what am I going to, I don't know. So it was really one day at a time. And it took me an incredibly long time to, like, get involved in the steps and really turn my life and will over to this program. I could get that 1%. So anyway, back up. I mean, I actually got into more trouble sober than I got into when I was drinking. Because I was drinking alone, I mean, or I was out of the house. I nannied upstate, and so I did a lot of my drinking and drugs in the woods, because you're here. In the woods, you know, stumbling, you know, we drove drunk a lot. Well, I didn't drive, but they drove drunk a lot. You know, I nearly walked off of any number of cliffs trying to stagger home. You know, like, there were so many road signs for me. You know, just they threw my sneakers. I drank with a bunch of boys, and I was the only girl, and they just thought it was funny. And I was also the youngest, and they thought it was funny to, like, just trick me into doing stupid stuff. And so they threw my shoes into the pool one night, primarily, I think, because I had a white T-shirt on, but we won't go there. I didn't dive in. I jumped in. It was a shallow pool. I jumped in and, you know, was swimming to the bottom to get my shoes, and I couldn't figure out which way was up. And somebody finally was like, uh-oh, something's wrong, and they pulled me up, and luckily I was okay. But, you know, part of my story is that a lot of people that I got sober with are no longer okay. A lot of people didn't stay. I don't know, you know, I call it grace. I don't know, given the fact that I was so resistant to these rooms when I came in, I don't know why I got to stay, and so many of my friends ended up wrecking cars, wrecking marriages, losing jobs, ending up in jail. But there's a lot of that. I still am in touch with that core group of, you know, 10 or 15 people that that I got sober with. And every year or so, we get together. And it's amazing to me how many of them, like, they still come. They're drinking, but they still come because, like, we went through such a profound thing together. But just watching their lives from this outside perspective and just sort of seeing the havoc that alcoholism, the slow, like, they talk about it as a slow form of suicide. And just watching just how they erode their lives day after day, and how on the contrast side of that, like how I'm given an opportunity every single day to live an observed life, and to basically, I mean, my entire program at this point is about taking an action, seeing if it worked. If it worked, I keep taking that action. If it didn't work, I change that action. And that's really, it's as simple as that, you know. You know, I drop a penny into the water and I watch how it ripples. And, you know, I make my adjustments and whatnot based on that. And, you know, this program, it's, you know, it's, especially when you stay sober for such a long time, it's layers of the onion. And as those layers of the onion come off, you get new information, and it informs older assumptions that you had about yourself. Like, the person that I am today, I never could have guessed I would be this person. I never could have, you know, even imagined that person. But as I've gone, there's been these slight little changes. I mean, if you'd asked me all those years ago, you know, would I be, you know, a practicing Buddhist and meditate every single day and be married and, you know, la-di-da-di-da, all this kind of the cash and prizes that I have as a result of, you know, living a sober life, I couldn't have even predicted it. But here I am before you, a very happy candidate. So let me just go back into my story a little bit. So 51%. I was sober probably about 3 months before I actually said that I was an alcoholic. I showed up, you know, at meetings, and I was like, I'm just visiting. And And I also, just a funny side note, that time when I slid down the drapes and barfed all over the window, my mom was actually sober at that point. She actually brought me to a meeting when I was 12. And it was a meeting in Mahwah, New Jersey, and like 5 years into sobriety, I went back to that meeting just on a whim. Like, I didn't remember it. And I was sitting in the meeting going, like, this is really weird. Similarly, when I walked in here and I was like, I don't remember. I've spoken here before and I don't remember this room. Well, you moved rooms. But I was sitting in this meeting in Mahwah. It's a candlelight meeting on Friday night. I don't know if it's still there. But I was sitting there going, this is so weird. It's so weird. I feel like I've been here. And a guy who had happened to have been at that meeting was like, Colin was like, yeah, you were here when you were 12. Your mom brought you. And I was like, oh. I, you know, sort of feel like the Talking Head song. How did I get here? So 51%. When I came in, just a props to throwing away any drugs, paraphernalia, or alcohol you might have stashed. I didn't do that. I was very attached to my the roach clip that I had. It was a bullet. We pulled the head off. My dad was a cop, I should say that. So I got some, I stole some nice items. And I was very attached to that, and attached to the number of bottles that I had also stolen out of my grandmother's basement. I would go down there with my school bag and put bottles in and separate them with notebooks. So when I went up the stairs, I didn't clank. Sort of, you know, older people's version of, you know, taking the garbage out late at night so the bottles didn't clank. It's the 13-year-old version of that. I didn't get rid of that. And because I had reservations, I didn't know. It was hard to get. didn't know if I wanted to give it up. And there was one time, I don't know what the problem was. You know, it was probably the kind of drama du jour that I was really very blind to back then. I see it very clearly now when I'm sort of in a story of forever or just like stomping my feet because I'm not getting what I want or I'm losing something that I've got. Something was going on, and I just wanted to smell it. Like when your disease talks to you like that, I just want to smell it. I'd feel better if I just smelled it. Who's up here talking to me? You know, like that's a very naughty committee member. I had gotten some telephone numbers. You know, so newcomers get telephone numbers. You don't know, they might save your life. And I was just going to smell it, and I cracked the bottle of Bailey's liqueur, I believe it was, because as a kid I liked to drink sweet things, so just a warning. And I was just smelling it, and back then we only had like rotary dial phones, and for some reason, like this is the grace, for some reason I called Janine. Janine, she wasn't my sponsor, she was just a woman who gave me her number. Blubbering, like, you know, like inaudible on the other end of the phone, like, and she picked up the phone, and she convinced me to pour it down the drain, and that was my first step. You know, it took me 3 or 4 months to get there, but that was my first step. That was when I saw that I was powerless, that I knew I didn't want to drink. But that craving had come up, and I recognized that craving. I knew about that craving from, you know, 3 years in Alateen. I knew that when my head sort of locked onto that thought, you know, it was an obsession that no human power could break, that I was just like, you know, sort of a very badly guided missile. And I saw it for just that glimpse, and I had just that little bit of willingness, and that was sort of what I wrote on. And Janine took me through the first 4 steps. I knew that I had to get through step 4 before I went away to college. I was 4 years sober. It took me up to my 4th year to do my 4th step. And God bless Janine. I mean, I would call her up. I my husband always jokes with me because I'm really I'll listen to a sponsee forever. Like I'll let them go and just, you know, like really let them go. Because she let me go. Like I'd be like, Why? Like I don't understand. And she'd just be like, God, turn it over. It's God, turn it over. Like God knows. Ask God why, you know, like just acceptance. She just like drilled the first kind of like powerlessness, serenity prayer, acceptance, like that was my first 3 years. Like I didn't, you know, for whatever reason, I was a slow learner. I didn't get beyond that. But she really laid a foundation with those key principles that just, you know, carried me through. See, I'm going on, I told you I would. And so she laid the foundation, and when I left, I had smart feet. We called it smart feet back then. Like I knew when I got into a new city to go and find a meeting, I knew that I'd find people there that I could identify with. I knew that, you know, I could hook in, I could plug in. I have no idea how people, you know, earthlings as we called them, I have no idea how people up and move to a totally different part of the country and like if you don't have family or friends there, no idea how they do it. Because I need, like, you're my people. Like, I need to come here to find people that I can just, like, oh, yeah, you understand when that committee goes off in my head. Like, you understand that. And I need that communion with another alcoholic. And, you know, just to fast forward to today, I personally don't work with one single sponsor. I have a group of 4 women that I work with. I have no secrets. We're sick as our secrets, and that's my one rule. Like, I have no secrets from any of them or from my husband, for that matter. And it's because they each, and for me back to them, we each have something, a different experience that we can give each other and different angle on things. And sometimes I need to hear, you know, my wise friend who's got a really strong God angle because I have a really strong Buddha angle. And sometimes I need that balance. You know, other times I need a different perspective. So this is what works for me, you know, and that's something else I always like to say when I speak. This is what works for me. It might not work for you. Like, this is a program you need to, you know, there's an amazing foundation, steps, you know, suggestions, traditions, all of that. I still need to carve that into something that works for me, something that I can wrap my entire freaking life around, because like that's how important AA has to be to me. Like, it can't be something that I sort of do on weekends, or, you know, like, this is my life. Like, yeah. So anyway, let's fast forward to to the 20th century. Let's fast forward to like at least the last 10 years when I moved back down to New York. Around year 13, 14, I was living upstate New York. I was back to a situation where like I didn't come to meetings and see my people. Like, I came to meetings and I saw people who were, you know, a lot older than me, you know, had families. Like, I just was not identifying. And instead of looking for how I could give back to meetings, I sort of checked out a bit. And you know, exercise and, like, all these other things, move a muscle, change a thought, like, that was what worked. You know, A's great. I still went. I still checked in. But, like, I was on a different path. And I was dating somebody at that time who was outside of the rooms. And when I look back now, I was on my way. It was the slippery slope, you know. It was like just not enough contact with people, not enough of that kind of, you know, sober reference coming back to me. And, you know, luckily I got a job down here in the city, and I moved down here, and New York AA reinvigorated me. Like, I came here, and it was exciting, and you guys talked about it differently, and you were really, like, almost competitive about the steps. Like, it was like if you could throw down, like, page numbers, like, I can throw down quotes, but God help me if the page numbers, they've changed the page numbers so many times now that, like, I don't have a chance. But, you know, and it reinvigorated me, and, you know, it got me back here, and I think I was finally old enough to start sponsoring people. It took me years to sponsor people just because I was so much younger than everybody. I mean, I might have, you know, 15 years, but I was still only 30, and who wants to listen to me if you're older than me? But I got totally back involved, and I found a spiritual program that, like, that just rocked me. That sort of, you know, Bill talked about AA as like a spiritual kindergarten, and he suggested that we all really go out and investigate, we seek. And in my seeking, I happened to come upon this, you know, meditation practice, and it where AA was a candle, it was like a sodium halogen light, you know, on my thinking. And I saw in a way that I had never seen before. And it's honestly, it's just because I was ready. I saw in a way that I'd never seen before my thinking. And it just, like, sort of like when they talk about in 6 and 7 that these things are lifted, I saw it, and it was so excruciatingly painful to just see, like, so clearly that kind of fucked up mess in there, but see the truth of it, see it from a second, like, see it from the vantage point of, like, a sponsor, the way a sponsor might see your thinking, or a friend might see your thinking, because we're blinded to our own thinking. We need those outside eyes to be like, you might want to check that. You know, and I saw it firsthand, and it really, it changed everything for me, and so that's a huge part of my life now. I still do lots of meetings. I still speak whenever I'm asked. When I came in, people said, you never say no to AA. And they had the blue card, and it said, whenever anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. And that was given to me, so that's what I give back. And I trust when I come to a meeting like this that my perspective on this may help one of you. And if I can do that, that's a good day, you know. So I just get weepy when I say that. Anyway, so that's my story in a nutshell. Thank you.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.